Episode 77, Ancient Warfare. Welcome to the History of the Bible. In the last episode, we introduced the city of Jericho, its walls, and the plans that the Lord gave Joshua to conquer the city. So after receiving the instructions on how to conquer the city of Jericho, Joshua then told the people. The very next day, Joshua got up early in the morning and set the people up for marching around the city. He would line the army up to march out first, then would be the seven priests, each having a ram's horn. The Ark of the Covenant would follow behind the priest, and lastly, the rear guard would come up. The priest would blow their trumpets the whole time while walking around. However, because these trumpets were ram's horns, there was no way to control the tune that came out. It was only different lengths of horn blast depending on the priest. Now, the army is prepared to walk around the city. Each day would only be about 1 1/2 hour march around the city, and then they would be done for the day. That is until the seventh day. That day, they were to walk around the city 7 times rather than the normal once a day. Walking around the city 7 times would have probably taken about 10 hours. But before we get to the results of the Israelites walking around the city of Jericho, we're going to talk a little bit about ancient warfare when it came to sieges of cities. That way we can compare it to what the Israelites did. Often, when we think that if a city is going to be placed under siege by an invading army, that means the end is near for the city. However, this is not the case. It wasn't really for another 500 to 700 years from when Joshua was alive that the art of siege warfare was perfected. Most invading armies would rather have faced each other on the battlefield than try to wage a siege against a city. The technology for siege warfare was not created until 900 BC or thereabout. The technology for siege warfare during the time of the Israelites' exodus was just about a mobile head covering, a battering ram, and maybe a siege tower. But siege towers didn't come around until later in world history. Most often, the best way to get past the walls of a city was to go over the top or through the gates. The gates were the weakest point of the whole wall. Often, they were made out of wood that could be chopped at with axes by the invading army. Otherwise, the next best thing was to go over the walls. This would mean that the invading armies would fight their way up to the city's walls, place a ladder up against the wall, and attempt to climb up and over the walls before being pushed or shot down. On top of the siege technology not being a thing, sieges could and would often last months, even years. Egyptian records indicate some sieges that took up to 3 years before it ended. So it wasn't ever a guarantee that when an army waged a siege against a city, the city would fall. The only reason that the city would fall would be due to hunger or thirst. However, in the case of Jericho, it had a spring of water within the city. Now, this was not always the case for all cities. In reality, most cities had to dig tunnels to bring fresh water into the cities. But not Jericho. It was able to have year-round springs of fresh water because of it being located inside the city's walls. The other thing that would cause a city to surrender during a siege is the lack of food. But even this, we know that at the time that the Israelites attacked the city of Jericho was right after the harvest. Therefore, the supplies for the people within the city would have just been filled, and it would last for them at least a year. As we'll find out later, there is evidence to show that the grain jars were filled when the siege happened. So on the outside, If Joshua didn't have any plans from the Lord, the siege would have lasted a very long time. The other thing that we should address before we begin the battles of the land of Canaan is what the Israelites wore and fought with. As the Israelites were coming into the land of Canaan during the late Bronze Age, the weapons were made out of bronze. Weapons that were used in the offensive can be put into three different groupings. The first is short-range weapons, which would mean hand-to-hand combat. These weapons were things such as swords, daggers, and spears. Often, these weapons were all made out of bronze, but there were still many daggers that would have been made out of flint. However, because them being a weaker material compared to bronze, they would have been mostly used for cutting. This can be seen when the Israelites crossed the Jordan River. They made themselves knives out of flint to do circumcision. The next group would be the medium-range weapons. Spears could also fall into this grouping, but often, instead of throwing their spears, soldiers would carry a javelin, which was similar to a spear, but it was designed to be shorter and lighter. The last group of weapons was long-range weapons. These weapons could be used to either throw or fire objects at the enemy from farther distance. This would be bow and arrows and slings. Because of the Israelites coming out of Egypt, they were more than likely would have used much of the same tactics, weapons, and armor as the Egyptians. Also, the Egyptians would have been a superpower in the land of Canaan, and much of their ways of fighting battles would look like the Egyptians. Typically, a soldier would carry a spear, a dagger, and a shield into battle, although it could be supplemented for copper axes and swords. However, the main weapon of choice was a spear. Not only did it give a little bit more of a range when fighting hand-to-hand combat, but it was also cheaper to make. Compared to the sword, which was one solid piece of metal that made the whole sword, the spear only needed to have the head made out of metal. The rest was a wooden shaft. The reason that cost was a concern was that during this time in history, there were not many nations that had a standing or professional armies. If they did have a professional army, it was often very small. The army was made up of people of that nation or tribe. This meant that the weapons that soldiers carried were not standard issued. They were the weapons that a person personally owned, meaning these were often their hunting weapons when not in battle. The shield that the soldier would carry was often made out of animal hide or woven papyrus. Metal shields would not come around for a very long time. It has been said that in ancient times, animal hide was like modern-day plastic. What is meant by this is that an animal hide was made into various products, all with different levels of durability, and the hide was able to be shaped into any shape before it became hardened. The sword that was used by some soldiers was made out of bronze. It would more than likely be made after the design that the Egyptians used. The Egyptians were famous for using a sword that was called the sickle sword. This sword was a single-handed sword that was made for hacking. The dagger was usually used for stabbing at very close combat. For the next grouping of weapons, it would be mid-range. Sometimes in addition to what the soldiers already carried for battle, they would carry a single javelin. Although it seems like it was very similar to a spear, the javelin had its place in the time of battle. The javelin was used as a thrown weapon. However, the javelin was expected to be used once. Soldiers would throw it at their enemies, who were coming toward them, but it would never be retrieved as it was a one-time use. Although this wasn't a waste either, It was used tactically to defeat the enemy. Now, what makes the difference between the spear and the javelin? One might just say that the javelin was just a spear in flight. Possibly. However, the javelin was designed in a way that it was meant to be thrown, whereas the spear was designed to stay in a soldier's hand and to be able to fight all day with it. This design difference would be seen in the way that the shafts of the javelin and spear would be of different sizes and weight. The other thing is the heads of the spear versus the head of the javelin. The spear was just a bronze tip that would go in and out of a body or armor very easily, causing punctured wounds. The javelin, on the other hand, often had a head made with barbed ends. This would make it difficult to remove from a person's body or armor once it was thrown into them. Practically speaking, this would make it hard to remove from a person in the heat of battle, so there wouldn't be any chance that the enemy would pick up the recently thrown javelin and throw it back. It was a one-time use weapon in battle. The last group of weapons would be long-range weapons. During this time, there were only two things used for long range, the bow and a sling. By this time in history, the composite bow had begun to replace the simple single-arc bow that would have only been effective at close range. Although, the single-arc bow was still used in some people groups. However, the composite bow allowed for archers to be farther away from the battle and still be effective. The other weapon for long range was the sling. In essence, the sling would look like an eye patch, a large piece of material in the center with two cords coming off in opposite sides. A rock would be placed inside the larger piece of material, and the wielder would hold the ends of the two cords. Taking the sling, it would be spun around to gain momentum, only to be released at the target. A skilled warrior in the art of the sling could fire a missile up to 62 miles per hour, or 100 kilometers, and reach 1,300 feet, or 400 meters. Often, a skilled warrior with a sling could be more accurate and cause more damage than most archers and their bows. Also, because of their speed and distance that it could be thrown, slings were used in the defense and offensive attacks on cities. Soldiers would fire down from the walls, all while soldiers attacking a city could accurately hit the defenders on the walls. These are the weapons of choice, and what was mostly used during the time that the Israelites began their conquering of the land of Canaan. As for armor, there wasn't anything that we would think of today as armor. The only thing that was used as armor was leather shirts and kilts. Did it do much for protection? Possibly. The shields were made out of leather, but against a piercing arrow, a fast-thrown stone that was hurled at them, a sword slice, or a spear that was stabbed into a person, it would still have its shortcomings. Leather armor was often best used in protecting against any type of slashing motion, but stabs would be able to go through it a lot easier. Although leather was starting to be used during this time for full body armor, often it was too expensive to have a full set. That is why it was usually only a shirt, kilt, and a shield that was made up of leather. Something that should be addressed before we move forward, and that is chariots. Chariots and mounted warfare were just about to become a thing. However, for the most part during this time, horses hadn't been seen in Egypt or the surrounding nations. Now, we do know that chariots were used for transporting royal and high-ranking officials such as Joseph in Egypt. But the use of them in battle was not yet effective in some areas. To use a chariot in a battle, it would take a lot of resources to come up with just one. The question seemed to come down to whether or not to use a chariot or cavalry in battle. Although neither one had been used effectively in battle, in reality, chariots were more effective in battles, but they cost more resources to just get one of them into the battlefield. Cavalry, on the other hand, only needed to place a single soldier on top of a horse, and they had more maneuverability. The only issue with this is the development of horseback riding. In terms of development, the chariot came first. The main reason that this was the case was that during the late Bronze Age, horses hadn't been bred to the point that they were large enough for battle. They were smaller than they would be later on in history. Plus, saddles and stirrups had not yet been invented to allow for a rider to use horses for cavalry effectively. This should give an idea of how ancient warfare was done regarding sieges, as well as what the Israelite soldiers used and carried into battle in regards to armor and weapons. Now that we have the battle plan that was given to Joshua from the commander of the army of the Lord, we know what the Israelites were more than likely wielding for the coming battle. All that was left was to obey what the Lord had told Joshua. Thus begins the march around the walls of Jericho. So join us next time in episode 78, The Battle of Jericho. Until next time, remember that you are loved, special, and worthwhile. Thanks for listening to the History of the Bible. Let's get the word out by liking, rating, and following the show. This episode was produced by Nikeo Productions. To check out other shows, search for Nikeo Productions wherever you listen to podcasts.